Profiles in Teaching with Technology is a podcast series created by Music First, a company dedicated to providing world-class cloud-based tools, content, and classroom management platforms to music teachers around the world. Each episode features a K-12 music educator who uses technology to enhance their teaching in innovative ways. We'll discuss the what, why, and how of their technology integration and hopefully share some teaching strategies that you can use in your own classroom. For more information about Music First, please visit www.musicfirst.com. There you'll be able to find out about all of our platforms, as well as sign up for a free 30-day trial. Rick Mendoza has both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music education, and his graduate research was selected to be a part of the 2013 Music Educators National Conference. In addition to his graduate work at the collegiate level, and as a former instructor for drum and bugle corps, he has taught elementary music, middle school, and high school band. Currently, he is the associate director of bands at East Central High School in the East Central Independent School District in San Antonio, Texas, which in 2019 was named one of the best communities for music education by the NAM Foundation. In addition to band, he also teaches music theory and AP music theory. He recently presented a clinic at the 2024 Texas Music Educators Association Conference on the topic of teaching students to compose with technology, titled From Foundations to Film Composing. When he is not working, he enjoys spending time with his wife and their two small but energetic boys. So, everyone, this week on the podcast, I am very excited to welcome Rick Mendoza. Rick teaches at East Central High School in San Antonio, Texas. I met Rick last month at the TMEA show. Very impressed with him. And all of my staff members, Rick, were like, you got to talk to this guy. So, Rick, I'm so happy you're on our podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this. Thank you.
Super cool. So the way I start every podcast is for you to like give your life story in about 10 minutes in terms of music, you know, how you got interested in music, what instruments you play or evoke, whatever, you know, your kind of musical path, and then how you got into teaching, and then, you know, kind of a career snapshot from your first year to where you are today.
Yeah, so in terms of starting teaching, this is year, I think, 17 for me.
Wow.
Of teaching. I started teaching at James Nicky Rowe High School in McAllen, Texas, deep South Texas. And when I was hired there, I was part of a team of six band directors.
Wow.
And the downside of that was that I was kind of on the lower end of the totem pole and didn't have a band to conduct, but it allowed me to kind of hone in on my teaching methods with individuals and small groups and stuff like that, and really kind of step back and learn from everybody else. So eventually I kind of got to that point where, okay, I want to conduct something, you know, and I just started with a horn choir. I had some great horn players.
Mm-hmm.
And arranged a few pieces, bought a few other ones, and just started conducting small ensembles. And we'd put on a small concert every year. And at some point, all the woodwind players got jealous and wanted to do something like that. And my coworker started doing flute ensembles and clarinet choirs and stuff like that. And it ended up being like a yearly chamber concert event, which we would run. My last few years there, I took over a jazz band and concert band. When I initially started there, I had a coworker who was really into jazz, and he just did an awesome job with the jazz band that we had. And he just kind of always let me hang out and learn and step in every now and then. And so when he left, I naturally stepped into that role of the jazz guy, and it kind of became what I was known for in the area, is my jazz band and jazz combos and stuff like that. Even though it wasn't like my area of expertise, I had some history playing jazz, but so I had a lot more ensemble time by the end, which was really cool. But I always felt like I was still missing out on stuff that I didn't learn. As an undergraduate, I completed all my coursework in 3.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Where did you go to undergrad? So my undergraduate is from Texas A&M Kingsville.
Oh, cool. All right.
And I kind of got to that pretty quick compared to, you know, a lot of other people there. But I was a part of just about everything. Concert bands, jazz bands. I played in mariachi, trumpet ensemble. I'm a trumpet player. I had a brass quintet. I sang in the concert choir. I sang in jazz singers. I even sang in the first opera workshop they put on. And I played in an early music ensemble. I played recorder. So I was very diversified in my performing experience. But I just didn't feel like I spent enough time to get the educational experience because I got through so quickly. So I kind of had an itch to go back to school. It was just a question of, what do I want to do when I go back? What do I want my degree to be in? And I struggled with that a lot. I was very into music history and just history in general. But that just really didn't seem to be something that was going to help me in the long run. Mm-hmm. And I had to stop and think about, if I'm getting another degree, what is the best thing that will help my current and future students down the line? Because that's really what it's going to be about.
Right.
So I ended up getting a master's in music education from University of Texas, San Antonio.
Oh, very UTSA. Very cool.
UTSA Go Runners. And I had a professor when I was in Kingsville, Dr. Jason Kwok. He's a piano professor. And I would run into him a couple times a year. And every time I would run into him, he would ask me, when are you going back to school? When are you going to get that other degree? I mean, we had had conversations since I was an undergraduate, and he was constantly following up with me. Do it now. Do it before you have family, have a house, and, you know, all those other obligations. And so I was finally able to say, I'm doing it now. And so I had a lot of people kind of question me in terms of, why would you get the same degree twice? And in my opinion, it really was not the same degree at all. And I think that's probably true for any graduate degree as opposed to the similar bachelor's degree.
I did the same thing. I have a bachelor in music education and a master's in music education.
And so would you agree with that?
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so in my coursework, I did something that I just never thought I would do. I started to like research and not just appreciate it, but actually kind of enjoy and understand that process of research and what its importance is.
Yeah.
And so I was graduating. I had my graduate research picked to be presented at the what used to be MENC conference, and now it's, I think it's changed the name to NAFME, Research for Teacher Education. And I flew out to North Carolina and had my research there and kind of had no clue what that was all about. One of my research professor, you know, kind of gave me a brief rundown of what it was, but I just kind of didn't really piece it together. And I get there and find out that it's all people with PhDs or completing PhDs. And I was, as far as I know, the only master's student there.
That's awesome.
Which was a little intimidating at first.
Yep.
But once I kind of saw, like, okay, my stuff is holding up and I'm getting really great responses and feedback to all this, like, then it kind of felt good, like I belonged there. And the funny thing about that was that was the conference itself happened after I had already completed my degree, my master's, and it happened the first week of my new job.
Oh, wow.
I got hired about maybe 3 weeks or so into a school year to teach elementary music. I had no clue what I was doing.
That's an interesting switch, man.
yeah, I, No idea. Never taught elementary. Really kind of never wanted to. I mean, everything I did was band. I mean, I had always wanted to do that, even going back to high school. I had great band directors, and I always felt like I just learned so much from them, and I just wanted to kind of reciprocate that to other people. But a job came along, and I took it, and I said, I'll take it, but I'm going to have to be out that first week. And so it was this weird kind of combination of trying to figure out what the heck am I going to do? And then, okay, I got to go present this to a totally different group of people. So I taught elementary for a little while, met my wife there.
There you go.
And she was a first grade teacher, and she would sometimes send me her problem kids to hang on to for a little while.
That's awesome.
And that's kind of how we ended up meeting. We both ended up finding new jobs at the same time. Right before we got married, we kind of talked a little bit about moving, and then we both just ended up finding good jobs. And that kind of led me to where I am now. So now I'm at East Central High School in San Antonio. I conduct concert bands. I have a clarinet choir that I conduct as well. I teach music theory, AP music theory. And I'll say I have requested a new course for next year, which is digital music and sound production.
Awesome.
And I'm waiting to see if that's actually going to exist next year or not. But yeah, I'm trying to make digital music a bigger part of what we're doing here. In the past couple of years, and going to the Texas Music Educators Conference and the preceding Time Conference right before that, I've just seen so much about digital music, and I've tried to learn more every year about it, because I just have this feeling like it's going on in so many other places, and it just hasn't made its way to Texas yet in terms of public schools. And so I feel like it's kind of the next wave coming, and I just kind of want to be on the forefront of it.
That's awesome. So I'm going to back you up a little bit, because
so
Rick, I'm an East Coaster. I taught my entire career in New Jersey, and I've been to TMEA now for 20 something, almost 30 years presenting. And I think when I got into the corporate world and started visiting schools in Texas, I was flat out blown away. So back to when you said you were one of six band directors in McAllen, Texas, right? I don't think very many music teachers on the coasts, meaning like the entire Eastern Seaboard, the entire California, right?
Yeah.
We just can't wrap our heads around the size of the programs. And I've been to Oklahoma, Texas, all around that kind of central part of the U.S. and the southern part of the U.S., Georgia, even going across. And, six band directors in one school. I mean, what's it like? I know this is a music tech podcast, but whenever I hear that, because I've seen it, I was in a high school in North Plano, Texas. And same thing, there were six band directors. And I was like, what? I mean, what's it like being on a staff of six for a band program in a high school?
So, I should say we also, like I'm sure many other people, fill out our days with teaching at the middle schools as well.
Okay.
But first and foremost, it's great for the kids in the program.
Yep.
Having a little more specialized instruction.
Mm-hmm.
But also the ability to say, okay, let's kind of isolate some of these students who are falling behind and need some more help catching up. And we have the resources staffing wise to help them catch up, or we have the resources to do things like we did with chamber ensembles and stuff like that, that not many other people get to do. And I should mention, when we did things like chamber ensembles, a lot of times we incorporated students from the middle schools as well into those concerts, because we taught them during the day and were able to kind of be on the same page with what they're learning. It's definitely nice having more help, and you're absolutely right, and especially listening to you know, some of your previous episodes and hearing people, you know, describe what they do every day and hearing some people saying, you know, I teach elementary band and middle school and then I high school and all that. And so many people are great at that. And I just think that, why wouldn't you want to give your kids the best opportunity to succeed?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And, you know, it's not necessary just for the New Jersey folks, teachers or New York teachers or Florida teachers, California teachers that might be listening to this podcast. It's not that Texas just, you know, hires six band directors. They've got 400 kids in the band. I've never seen anything like it. There's just these huge, I mean, it's a rapidly growing area. San Antonio, Austin, Houston are just, if you've never been to Texas, if you've never been to TMEA, you need to go. You need to go to the Time pre-conference that Rick mentioned. It's a really great thing. It always happens on the Wednesday before the show kicks off. But it's just, you know, that saying that everything's bigger in Texas. Well, it's not just the trucks and the football stadiums. It's also the amount of kids that are in the school. I'm sure that San Antonio is a growing. I mean, right up the road in Austin, they're like building, you know, a couple of elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school every year. It seems like so. It's just an amazing place, and it's. You know, how wonderful would it be to have a full staff? Because for many people outside of Texas and on the coast, they're an army of one in their school. And it's just, it seems so cool to have that, that kind of a full staff. It's just something I've always fascinated with and jealous. So I'm imagining you're going to stay in Texas for your whole career.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure my wife has something to say about that, but I will say also with the addition of all these extra classes that are now being taught, like we have piano classes at my current school now, which is relatively new. We have our music theory classes. Like I said, we're trying to add something digital. We have music business classes.
Wow.
As well, which someone else teaches. So, I mean, we have a diversity of things that we offer, and I feel like we're, you know, tuned into, there are more careers than fighting somebody for one job, playing in an orchestra or, you know, something like that. And these are real skills that kids can learn, and useful skills too, learning how to make music, even if it's just digitally and not, you know, actually composing notation. And I want to kind of say something else real quick as far as having a large staff. It wasn't just that, you know, we had that staff to work with every day, but the area I grew up in and started my career in, South Texas, what's called the Rio Grande Valley, it's just a very open relationship that band directors have with one another down there. Yep. And not every place is like that. There's no, these are my secrets and you can't have them. That doesn't exist down there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it's very common to call somebody up from another school in another district and ask them for help because you heard their band and their clarinets were great and they're going to help you out. And I can say one time in particular, I called a band director who I knew from a nearby school district, not in our district. And I said, hey, like if you could give me some help at any point, and I really just wanted him to listen to my band. They brought their staff to my class.
Oh my God.
Their lunch and just jumped in and started telling kids, use this fingering, try this here. And I mean, that doesn't happen everywhere.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. So let's, you talked a tiny bit about what you do, but like describe the music program at East Central High School, like how many kids and what's your day to day? Like when you go in, you know, every day, this is your teaching gig.
So I am one of three band directors at the high school, and I'm about to blow your mind a little bit because I heard you talking with somebody recently on another episode about the population of their school. We are approximately 3,300 on our campus.
Oh, students. My God.
It's a very big campus.
Wow. How many high, do you know how many high schools there are in San Antonio ISD?
So we are the only high school in our school district. We are East Central Independent School District. There are a number of different school districts in San Antonio. We're small in terms of the amount of schools, but
right, but huge,
large, yeah, population.
Wow.
So I'm one of three. We have obviously concert band, marching band, the usual stuff. We just started a mariachi program last year.
Oh wow, very cool.
We have obviously choir. I guess I should mention theater. They're kind of the fine arts as well. Mm-hmm. But in terms of music, we have piano classes. I think this is year two of having piano classes. We have music theory, AP music theory. And I think that's everything. I think I'm right. Not leaving anything out.
And what is your specific gig? What groups are you running?
So I conduct a concert band some years, more than one, depending on kind of what our numbers are. My day is split between middle school and high school. So in the mornings, I go over to one of our two feeder schools and teach a few beginner classes and then kind of help out with one of their concert bands and make my way back to the band classes here at the high school. And in my afternoons, I teach music theory and AP music theory in addition to the usual kind of after school rehearsal type stuff. I left out one thing, which I actually just came from right now. We started an indoor marching winds group, which I just walked over from their rehearsal right now. So that's our next project also.
Oh, wow. Man, that's awesome. Fantastic. So how on earth did you get interested? Because, you know, you say you want to start a digital, you know, digital music class. How did you get interested in technology? Is it from coming to the, I mean, you said that, you know, you want to be kind of on the riding the wave and it's coming, but like, yeah. What sparked your interest? Was it going to conferences? Or is it really from the needs of the students?
So generally speaking, just kind of technology has always been kind of a fascination with me, like mm-hmm. just checking out new stuff that's being invented all the time. Like I'm just kind of always fascinated by that. And I feel like for years, I've always been trying to find little ways to kind of just do something new that just kind of seems cool.
Yeah.
Like whether it's, I'll say about maybe 15 years ago, I remember I started putting a microphone and a tuner on a projector in my band class mm-hmm. and having other band directors walk in and just like mind blown. How did you do that? They can all see what they're playing, you know?
Yep.
So just little things like that. I was just always looking for something small. And then within the past couple of years, I started going to the Wednesday time sessions right before TMEA, as you mentioned, and just seeing some things that other people were doing in other places. Just, it was just so cool. I remember seeing, I think 2 years ago, I wish I could remember the name of the person, but somebody showing off, not showing off, but I mean, they're showing off what their kids had done. He worked somewhere, I think in Ohio, and he was showing.
That's Will Kuhn for sure. It must
well,
be.
Well, I saw him this year, but it was somebody else previously. I can't remember their name, but he blew my mind this year, by the way. But somebody showcasing like a digital music ensemble that they had, and he had all these videos of like an electronic show they would put on with their art department, and that just blew my mind. Like it was just so cool.
Yep.
And yes, seeing Will this year definitely really just kind of contributed to that. So for the most part, it was seeing those time sessions, and that's kind of where I started to learn about music first.
Yep.
And Soundtrap just kind of really piqued my interest.
Absolutely.
And it just seemed like I don't need a lot to start with this. And that's definitely been true.
And that's a super important thing that you just said. It doesn't take a lot. It's not a lot of money. It's not a huge investment. And you don't have to get everything. Right.
Right. So,
yeah. I mean, Soundtrap is such, it is probably our most popular, other than Practice First, it is our most popular product that people, that doesn't surprise me at all. And actually, what, you know, the people listening to these podcasts, I record everything in Soundtrap. That's actually what I use to produce these. I think you may have been at my podcasting session.
I was
about a month ago. It's true. That's what I use. So, are you using that with any of your ensembles yet? Or is this like all in preparation, or are you using it with your theory kids? Like, you know, how are you using music tech right now, with your kids?
So for band classes, it's a little harder.
Yep.
And I'm always trying to figure out how can I start doing more with them. In my band classes, probably the more basic techie type thing I do is having them use whatever their preferred music streaming service is, most likely Spotify for most of them, and giving them listening assignments. You know, somebody who plays your instrument, find me somebody living, find me somebody no longer with us, compare them. And I give them, you know, questions to answer. It's not just go listen to stuff. That's the most basic kind of techie related thing. And they think it's kind of cool because they can use their AirPods or something like that. But I've been really wanting to do some kind of assignments. I use Flat a lot, which I'll get into a little bit later. But I've really been wanting to try and incorporate that into band. And we just get so caught up in all the different performances and competitions.
Yep, absolutely.
Good and bad. That's another conversation.
No, I hear you. I mean, when I was a bander, I've said this before on the podcast, and it does sound heretical coming from someone who runs a music tech company, but I can count probably, you know, I've been to tons of Texas band halls where they've got like the metronome coming through the speakers and they're using total energy and they're doing their warm-ups and their long tones and everything. And, you know, there's subdivided metronomes coming through the speakers. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, is that really technology? Yeah. Technology is just there to help you guide the kids. Right. And giving kids Spotify assignment, are you using tech? No, you're giving the kids a listening assignment and they happen to be using tech. And as a band director, the only time I ever used it was outside of the rehearsal because I didn't have enough rehearsal time. I don't think any band director I've ever met goes, I have so much rehearsal time, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's a ongoing goal of mine to try and incorporate that more. But so the majority of it does happen in my music theory classes. Yep. And I told my class this year, I said, as we get closer to the end of the year, you're going to kind of be a guinea pig for what hopefully will be a future class. We do a lot of work on Flat notation software.
Yeah, that's great.
And we do a fair amount of Soundtrap. Last year was the first time that I had classes working in Soundtrap, which was just really awesome. And I'll elaborate on that in a minute. And I'm trying to make that a larger portion of what we do this year. As far as composing goes, they do a lot of, you know, your standard, right? 16 measure melody. Okay, now let's add some harmony and stuff like that. But they graduate into full-blown, we're going to write for this many instruments, minimum of, you know, this time as your final project, stuff like that. But they graduate Soundtrap a lot, as I'm sure you could imagine.
Yep.
I always have a couple of students in that class that have zero musical background or knowledge at all.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are band kids that, for some reason, like me, even though I'm mean to them half the time, but
And
they just want to take another class with me. But I always get a couple who just don't know anything about music. Just, I kind of want to see what this is about. And believe it or not, some of them end up writing really cool music at the end of the year.
Yep.
And that kind of just blew my mind. And it led me to, you know, all these things that we are supposed to teach in music theory, maybe they don't need to know all those things.
Mm.
Maybe we just need to have a solid base and zero in on a few core concepts, which is what I've been trying to do. And that's allowed me to have more time for other creativity assignments. So for Soundtrap, what we started doing last year was I had little short videos that I would strip audio from, mm-hmm. and then they would have to score music for it. Sometimes it was from Flat, sometimes it was from Soundtrap, sometimes they had to kind of combine the two. So they're essentially scoring a short film.
That's awesome.
And it just blew my mind what some of these kids came up with. And that was kind of the basis for my TMEA presentation, was just showing off what some of these kids were doing composing music. We have another assignment that they do where I come up with a generic commercial that they have to write music for.
Mm-hmm.
And that came to me. Some of it was from another time session. I heard somebody doing something similar where they actually had students writing music for and creating a commercial for like businesses in the community, which is really awesome.
Yep.
And so we started by just a fake commercial that I made, and I had a fake read for a new pharmaceutical that I made up, and it gave them just kind of a little bit of background on it. And I said, you've been hired. Your client wants 60 seconds. They want it to fade in, fade out, stuff like that, just to make them use more of the tools in Soundtrap.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
awesome.
It gave them kind of a vibe. They're looking for something a little bright, uplifting, and just, it was just cool stuff that they came up with. And it came to me, like I said, half in a time session, the other half from somebody's reels on Instagram that I saw them doing, that was just somebody just kind of making fun of, you know, people in the studio.
Right.
And it just kind of gave me this idea. And so usually their final project is another video, slightly longer video, but it's just so cool. Like showing these videos that kids create music for. We have another one where I take a YouTube video of some kind of children's story that has a read along with it. I strip all the audio. They have to create the music and they have to record themselves or somebody else reading the story to fit kind of the vibe of what they're doing, just to kind of get them in the habit of recording on a microphone and stuff like that, adding another layer to what we're doing.
That's awesome. Great minds think alike, because I used to do both of those projects with my kids way back when I was teaching. And I think that real world scenarios like that for kids are exciting. If you were to say, like, write a 60-second piece of music for me, you know, as an assignment, it's nowhere near as exciting as saying, all right, let's look at some commercials. Let's look at the role of the music in the commercials. Now you do it. Kids love that, man. They love this kind of real life scenario, real life, you know, because it's something that they're used to. They listen to these commercials. They probably watch YouTube like most kids at this point. And in the middle of the video, there's a commercial. So it's part of their lives. And it's, you know, again, and I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me. I'm going to go out on a limb here. And that is that it doesn't matter what the technology is. It doesn't matter that it's even the word technology. You just want kids to write music for a commercial. And the most convenient, affordable, accessible way for kids to do that, for kids to write music to a commercial, is to have them use technology. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Rather than staff paper or going into a recording studio and having them write all the parts down, they can do it on their darn phones at this point. I mean, you know, what do you think the role of music tech is in a music program? Do you highlight it as music tech, or are you really just focusing on, you know, the task at hand?
We're definitely trying to shift our mindset to it being referred to more in terms of tech and digital music. Yep. Just because we're in the music theory class, you know, we go through, I'd say maybe 2/3 of the year, the usual music theory stuff, but always trying to remind them of, here's why we're learning this. Here's how we're going to relate it later. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do a lot of, you know, your standard listening exercises, intervals and chords and stuff like that, but relating it to audiating something as you're composing later, or even if you're in Soundtrap and you kind of have a vibe of something in your head, it's a little bit easier for you to reproduce something having that, I call it inner ear,
yep,
to be able to reproduce it. And my goal this year, we weren't ready for it last year, and probably I wasn't ready for it either, but my goal this year is to at least have our kids put out one podcast.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool.
Which is why I was at your session, because I was trying to pick up a few tips, and I definitely did. But my goal is to just kind of have them, for one of their final projects, record a very short podcast, you know, describing their work and what they were thinking as they were composing it. So I'm hoping that we can make that happen, which will give me a good starting off point if and when we end up with this new digital music class, hopefully.
Yeah. And you know, obviously folks listening, you're listening to a podcast, so this gets very, yeah, it gets very meta very fast here, but the notion of kids making podcasts about music theory concepts is, you know, it's not that big of a leap to say, hey, I'd like you to, in a 3-minute podcast, describe what an appoggiatura is and give some examples, right? The kids, I teach right now, for the first time in my career, I'm teaching an amazing group of undergraduate students at my alma mater, which is Montclair State University. Go Red Hawks. And I told the students, we're recording this on leap year day, or leap day, I think it's called. And I told my students that next week we're going to be making podcasts. And when I was going over the syllabus, you know, these are like 19, 20-year-old kids. I'm going over the syllabus the first week of class. The only moment where they all like looked at each other with these bright eyes and smiles, as I said, we're going to learn how to make podcasts. And they're like, oh my God, we are? I don't think that I wrote this curriculum, and you know that I'm like big time, mm-hmm, into it, but it's just such an easy format for kids, because they consume them like they're going out of style. And for you to flip it and say, now you're going to make one and show them how easy it is. I'm sure your kids will love that.
Yeah. And I know we're going to have to work on enunciating a little bit and kind of speaking up a little bit. That's something that they're not very good at, like most high school students. But right. I haven't sprung that on them yet. I'm going to kind of wait till the last moment to kind of throw it at them. But I had sort of brought it up to my AP class last year, because it was a small group, and they were pretty excited about it, and we just weren't able to make it happen. But yeah, I think this group I have this year is going to be really excited about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So in your dream scenario, for if you can get this course approved for next year, what does it look like in your head?
So I think we will spend a lot of time on this podcasting, because if we do it, I do plan on using your curriculum that I've kind of slowly been digging into to prepare for it. I definitely want to make that a large part of what we do, just because I think it's cool. And I think it's, as you said, accessible, and it's something that they can share with everybody, not just people who understand music. And they can create their own music for the intros and stuff like that, as I'm sure you already know. Yep. But other than that, I'm kind of still feeling things out and seeing what they respond to right now in my class. And definitely Soundtrap is what I think will occupy our time the most. Mm-hmm. Long term, it would be great if we could turn this into some kind of group of students who collectively collaborate and create digital music that can be played for the masses here at our incredibly large campus, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, and Soundtrap, and I'm not saying anything disparaging by what I'm about to say, is a great stepping stone software title for kids. It's like a great entry level DAW that then they can, once they get all the concepts from it, they can step up to something like Logic, to Ableton, mm-hmm, Live, to Pro Tools, to, you know, like the pro level DAWs, and do actual music production. I don't think, you know, when you say podcasting, a lot of, oh, it's just talking to a microphone and putting it out on the internet. Not really. There's a lot of audio production that goes along. There's a lot of audio editing. You know, the simple conversation that you and I are having and the people are listening to right now, you know, yes, we're recording a Zoom call, but there's stuff that goes along with it. There's an intro, there's an outro, there's editing, there's playing, there's compression, there's mastering, there's making sure that voice levels are kind of consistent throughout the pod. You know, it's a lot, and kids love that kind of real world thing. I hope it works for you, man. I hope you get that class. I'm going to throw a curveball to you. I didn't know I was going to ask, and I've got two more questions after this because I'm looking at the time going, wow, that went quick. And that is that, you know, whenever I'm in Texas, I'm always cognizant of the real emphasis on creating incredible ensembles, choir, band, orchestra, mariachi, every jazz band. You know, whenever I hear student groups perform at TMEA, I am floored by the level of performance quality. And whenever I talk about music tech and creativity, specifically at TMEA and in those time pre-conferences, I'm always wondering in the back of my head, is this something that Texas, you know, teachers are into? Is like getting kids, you know, into creativity, into audio production, into making their own music, into, you know, every aspect of that. I'd love to get your, you know, you're a trumpet player. You teach instrumental music. It seems like it's the largest part of your gig. What do you think about creativity and what I call broadening the tent to get all the kids who aren't in those ensembles into the program? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I had a conversation with somebody at the TMEA convention after my session, and they actually came up to me the next 2 days and continued that conversation. It was somebody who had a background in production. And I was explaining to him, and I want to tell everybody else, I am not an audio engineer.
Right. You don't have to.
I don't know. Yeah, thankfully. And I don't know much about it. And I told a lot of people, you know, I talk about Soundtrap a lot because I think it's easy to use.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, user interface, but in terms of equipment. I mean, it's web-based. You can use your almost dying Chromebooks at school. You can use your iPads that are incredibly restricted. Like you can do all that at school. You don't need a whole bunch of shiny new equipment.
Right.
But to answer your question, I was having the conversation with this person and I was telling him, I think that a lot of it is just at the collegiate level. There hasn't been an emphasis in that aspect of the music world. And I'm seeing in Texas, I'm seeing some steps forward in that. My undergraduate, I told you I went to Texas A&M Kingsville. They just started offering a degree in, I think it's called music production, as well as a certificate.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I'm seeing some of that start to pick up. So I think as more college students are going through those programs and having more exposure to that, I think that's when kind of the wave will start coming, when those people are starting to advocate for those things a lot more. I think just the, we'll say band, because that's what I am, the band directors in general just don't have a good knowledge or understanding of tech. And, you know, a lot of us kind of get zoned into what we're doing, and either we don't have the time or a little bit afraid of learning a new area. But, you know, in terms of what I was talking about earlier, writing music for a commercial, that's a real world skill.
Absolutely.
And that's something that a kid could maybe go make a few bucks off of.
Sure thing.
If nothing else. Like that's, we preach to students in high school with school counselors and all this stuff about career readiness. And maybe it's not necessarily a career, but it's definitely a job.
Absolutely.
It's definitely something that they can do. I think we're just waiting for this next wave of somewhat more tech savvy teachers to start coming out.
I think you're right. I'm so excited, Rick, to hear that coming from a band director. And it has nothing to do with Texas. It's just that there's always been this idea that, you know, it's just bam, bam, ba, bam, bam, bam. And there's nothing, you know, there's nothing else in the music world, you know.
It goes back to the competition mindset.
Absolutely,
like
absolutely. So I got two quick questions for you before I have to let you go, Rick. It's been an awesome conversation. I'd love to know your advice that you'd give to other music teachers, you know, following up on what you just said, that are thinking mm-hmm. of incorporating music tech, but may not know what to do or how to do it or where to go.
Above all else, just don't be afraid of it. It's not there to hurt you. And like I said, you don't have to be a tech expert. Just like you don't have to be an expert in every instrument that you teach.
Right.
And I don't say that to mean just kind of wing it and don't worry about being good at it, but just, you know, take it one step at a time. You really only have to be a day ahead of your class. That's all.
Excellent advice, man. And believe me, there are many days where that's exactly right.
Yeah. And as I'm sure you know, I mean, you'll have students in your class who can probably help you out and teach you a few things and be your kind of tech assistant. And you know, don't be afraid to kind of pull them in and ask them questions as well.
Awesome. I love that. So now this, I'm fascinated. The last question is the magic wand question not every guest really likes, but I love asking it, which is just like, if you could just say, poof, now Music First does this, Soundtrap does this, Flat, any type mm-hmm. of music tech, it doesn't have to be Music First related, what would it be?
Well, like most of your guests, I'll say I thought about this for a long time, and I did. So two things, just broadly speaking, as far as tech goes, the magic wand would be for it to just be more accessible.
Yeah.
And I think everybody can kind of relate to that.
Yeah.
But more specifically, if we're talking about software in general, like I said, Flat and Soundtrap have been the core of what I've been doing. This year, I've started, well, really, end of last year, I started using Sight Reading Factory a lot with our band.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My magic wand would be for Sight Reading Factory to allow me to remove instruments or lines from the ensemble pages.
Oh, wow.
So for example, if, you know, like last year we had a band class where there were no horns in that class. And if we could click and remove that F line that takes up some of the screen space, that would be nice.
Oh my God, Rick, that is the reason I asked this question is for that answer, right? Because that's something that I've never thought of. Don Crafton at Sight Reading Factory, an amazing music educator, software, you know, guy, and made this great product. I am literally going to email him right after we put this podcast recording and hit pause. I'm going to email him and say, it would be really cool if you could collapse the parts to save screen. Man, that mm-hmm. is a great, I love it. That's why I asked. You just, like, you validated my whole reason why I ask it.
And you know, like, let's say you're teaching a beginner class and, you know, you have clarinets and saxophones in one class. Well, then, you know, you can remove some of those as well. Yep. That would be nice.
Awesome. That's awesome. And I am going to do everything I can to make that happen for you, Rick. That's super cool suggestion. Rick, I am not surprised at all that my staff was like, you have to talk to Rick. really fantastic. I hope I get to hang out with you more and find out more. Maybe I'll
Me
come
too.
Next time I'm in San Antonio, I'll come visit your class. Sounds like you're doing awesome things. And I really want to thank you for taking the time out, especially, you know, skipping out on your indoor marching band rehearsal to come and talk to me. Thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Have a great rest of your school year.
Thank you for listening to Profiles in Teaching with Technology from Music First. For more information about Music First, please visit www.musicfirst.com. If you would like to stay up to date with other music teachers doing innovative things in their classrooms with technology, please subscribe to our podcast through whatever outlet you listen to podcasts on. Thanks for listening.